At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. If you travel a lot with your dog like I do with Doug, feeding them well on the road can get surprisingly complicated, especially when you're touring 30-plus cities, staying in hotels, flying, driving, and basically living out of a suitcase. Frozen dog food sounds great until you realize you don't exactly have a freezer backstage. That's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients with meat and vegetables you can see in the bowl, but the difference is it's shelf-stable, which means I don't need a freezer or a cooler and there's no prep. So now I can throw a few packs in my bag and Doug still gets a healthy meal wherever we are. Doug absolutely loves it. And I like knowing I am feeding my baby something that's actually good for him. It's also the number one vet recommended fresh dog food made without preservatives or fillers. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.
Hey everyone, I'm Ashley Banfield and this is Drop Dead Serious. Welcome to the Northern Outpost. Good to have you here. If you haven't already subscribed, could you do me a solid? Boink. It's free, it's fun, and it helps. We are now 3 weeks into the Lindsay Clancy murder trial and I'm obsessed. I'm also loving how many people are asking me about it and giving their opinions on it. Loads of people are following this. They care a lot, right? So the jury has now heard a lot of testimony that seems to pull this case in a different direction every single day. And that is because prosecutors are laying out why this woman, Lindsay Clancy, is a horrible murderer, should be locked away for life. And the defense gets to just chip away at it with their cross-examinations, right? So the case looks awful, gets chipped away a little bit. And then the defense will hopefully mount a robust case as well. Sometimes the defense lawyers just say, no, nothing further, judge, no defense case. We don't think they've met their burden, so let's just give it a go and see how the jury feels. I don't think that's going to happen here. Lindsay's providers, they all agree that Lindsay Clancy was a hot mess, right? She was severely depressed. She was anxious. She was unable to sleep. But so far, in the prosecution's case, not one of the providers that they've put up as their witness has diagnosed a psychosis. And that's important because you got to go beyond like I have the blues to I'm in psychosis. I don't know right from wrong, because that's the question here. If you're legally insane, you have to satisfy two questions. Did you know the difference between right and wrong? And did you understand the nature and consequences of your actions? And if you're in a psychosis, you know, caused by postpartum, well, you're getting there to satisfying those questions, right? If you're just depressed, it's a little harder to prove that you didn't know right from wrong, right? Most of us, when we're depressed, we still know right from wrong. It's a big burden to satisfy. So you got to kind of get into the psychosis and the mania and all the rest. And so far, they're not saying that this rose to the level of psychosis. But the defense has been exposing incomplete records and disconnected providers and 13 different psychiatric medications prescribed in just 4 months, some of them taken, some of them not taken, some of them partially taken. Really a messy, convoluted approach to treating what was a very serious condition, right? Some of that's Lindsay's fault because she was changing providers and she was feeling side effects. And so she'd stop a med before maybe it took full effect and then start another one. And the providers weren't talking. Right. So again, when I say a hot mess, I mean it. Even Lindsay's digital trail can read two different ways in this trial so far, with the writings about resentment and love for her children, alongside searches for hallucinations and psychosis. And can you treat a sociopath? Those are her words, right, in her searches. And I've got to tell you about this extremely important piece of evidence that prosecutors introduced. It was a note. Not a handwritten piece of paper. It was a note that you write on your phone. And if you've ever done that, you know that you create it, you create the note, and then you can write it, then you can add to it, and it shows that it's being modified on certain dates. Well, Lindsay Clancy created a note on her phone on December 22nd, 2022. That's like a month before the killings. And so that note I'm about to read for you is really important. The note was modified on January 23rd, 2023. That's a month later, and it's one day before those three children were killed. So she creates the note. A month later, she modifies the note. And a day after that, she kills her three kids. That's important. And I want to read for you word for word what this note said. "Medication stole my motherhood and my life," she writes. "I was the healthiest, happiest mom. I worked out every morning, meditated, and took care of myself so I could be the best for my kids. Until prescription medication stole me from my own body. It began with a touch of postpartum anxiety. The baby wouldn't take a bottle and I was due back to go to work. He was on a strict nap schedule to get him to sleep through the night. I had three young kids to take care of and was a touch anxious, so I did what you do. I asked a psychiatrist for some Zoloft. It took me weeks to take it, but I finally took the plunge. I took 25 milligrams for 1 week. And then on the seventh day, I increased to 50 milligrams as instructed by my doctor. Well, that night I couldn't sleep a wink. I did take the medication at night and didn't know I wasn't supposed to, but still, not a wink. I called my psychiatrist the next morning. She said to stop taking it. The second night I barely slept too. She prescribed Ativan and Benadryl to fall asleep for the next night. That is when everything started going downhill. I took those meds to sleep for 2.5 weeks until the Zoloft was out of my system and then weaned off the Ativan followed by the Benadryl. And then once I tried not taking anything, I couldn't fall asleep and stay asleep. And I had become dependent on the Ativan to sleep but didn't realize it. I went to the ER at South Shore, care of palpitations and insomnia. My EKG was normal and they prescribed trazodone for the insomnia. It didn't work the four, and then the text cuts off. So here's what's important about that note. Again, it's created a month before the killings and the day before the killings, it's modified. And a lot of people are looking at that almost like, I'm going to make an excuse for what I'm about to do. It's a manifesto. Sorry, world, but that's what a lot of people see this note as. Will the jurors see this note that way? What was the reason for modifying the note the day before the killings? What modifications were made? I'm curious about that. And I want to know how different the note was from a month before till the date of modification, one day before the killings. Prosecutors didn't show what changed, right? They didn't show that, not yet anyway. They didn't say, well, here was the note originally, and here's how she changed it the day before the killings. That's not out there. And listen, if that doesn't end up being put out there in the court, in evidence, I think the jurors will be like, hey, what changed? Why aren't you showing us what changed, right? Why aren't you telling us? It could have just been, I opened it and I pushed spacebar and closed it, right? So that will be an interesting thing for the defense to actually check into. Maybe ask either during cross-examination or during their case. And hanging over all of this evidence is the almost unbearable emotional weight inside that courtroom of what happened. What happened in her home is indescribable, right? And the pictures have been pretty painful to look at. Three little babies, all under the age of five, ruthlessly killed using exercise bands in the basement. I think about it all the time. I don't know if they know whether she killed the children looking at them or faced away from them. I don't know. I know that Andrea Yates killed all five of her children face up in the bathtub. That's what the evidence showed. And I just thought, God, what were those kids seeing and thinking in those last moments? The horror and the terror. And I wonder about Lindsay's little kids too. I mean, Cora, Dawson, and Callan. Their names have to be said over and over again. And they deserve justice, right? They deserve justice, those little kids. And we the people, we deserve justice. We are a flock. And whether you believe it or not, we look out for each other. That's what the system effectively says. But the system also is supposed to look out for those who are incapable of knowing what they're doing, the nature and consequences of their actions, knowing right from wrong. Some people are trying to help their children by sending them to God. They don't know that what they're doing is actually just killing them. So this is a very, very polarizing case. The jurors have listened to Patrick Clancy, the husband of Lindsay Clancy, and the guy that you would think would be, you know, pointing all the guns at her. But no, he lost his three children at her hands, and he backs her. That should say a lot. The jurors have heard him as he discovered those kids on 911 on the call that he made. I mean, can you imagine the horror that this father went through? He discovers his three children and he's on the phone with 911. The jurors have seen the clothes that those kids were wearing. They've all endured graphic testimony about how each one of them died. That's not easy to stomach. You don't unsee or unhear any of that. I can say this, while we don't know exactly at this point anyway, it hasn't been illustrated in evidence or photographs, how Lindsay Clancy killed these kids, like what was the actual dynamics of the killing. She used the exercise bands and she strangled them. And Cora, the oldest, age 5, was found face down. And the baby, Callan, 8 months, also beside her, found face down. Dawson, the 3-year-old, the middle child, was found in a different part of the basement. So I don't know what happened there. I can tell you this. In the Andrea Yates case, Andrea began killing her children from youngest, baby Mary, all the way to her oldest, Noah, who was 7. And I cannot imagine what Noah was going through in those last moments. Maybe the younger ones weren't really sure what was going on. Certainly Mary wasn't. She was just a little baby. But Noah was 7. And when they found Noah's body, she had laid each of the dead children, all of their bodies out on the bed. When they found Noah, he had clumps of her hair in his hands. And there was testimony about her having to chase him in the house. So I will never, ever get over that. I will never get over covering that case. I will never get over those details. And I wonder all the time about the case involving Lindsay Clancy and how she killed the kids. Did Dawson run? Did Dawson see what was happening? Did he run? And is that why he was found in a different area of the basement? It's horrible. And this is why there's so much emotion attached to either side of this very, very sad case. This past week, Lindsay Clancy began sobbing uncontrollably in court. And of course, it was during the autopsy testimony of one of the children. And Lindsay Clancy cried out. I want you to hear it.
And what about injuries?
All right, counsel, could... We're going to take a break this time, all right?
Court, all right. George, close your notebooks. Place them on the chairs, please. Just wait for me.
Okay, that is the kind of thing that stops a judge right away and says, okay, stop, everything, stop. We got to get the jury out, got to get the defendant out. The jurors aren't supposed to be seeing that kind of thing, right? They're not supposed to be seeing reactions like that from the defendant. You can get up on the stand and do that if you want. You can do all the reaction you want up on the stand, but you can't do it from defense table. And I get it. There's emotion. It'll happen. It'll overtake people. But the judge has to get in as quickly as possible and say, halt. Get the jury out. This has to remain a dispassionate process. But again, you can't unring that bell. They saw it. They heard it. I don't know how it'll affect them. I don't know how it'll affect you. I don't know if you'll feel bad for Lindsay. Many people do. Many people feel very, very sad and very bad that she was a victim of the system. She tried and tried and tried to get help. She was spiraling in postpartum so badly, she had herself committed. She called a suicide prevention hotline twice and was like rejected. And her husband tried too. The two of them together tried and tried to get help over and over again. Appointments, 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 committal. And then it ended in this. So you can understand why a lot of people feel like she was failed by the system and those children were really failed by the system. And you can also understand why so many people say, not having it. three little babies were murdered.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Healthcare can feel complicated. That's why Optum uses technology to connect the people and processes that make healthcare easier, more affordable, and more effective. We're making it clearer for you to know exactly what your benefits cover. And to help you better manage your health, we're coordinating care between your doctors and your technology. We believe better, simpler healthcare is always possible. That's healthy optimism. That's Optum. Visit Optum.com to learn more.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. If you travel a lot with your dog like I do with Doug, feeding them well on the road can get surprisingly complicated, especially when you're touring 30 plus cities, staying in hotels, flying, driving, and basically living out of a suitcase. Frozen dog food sounds great until you realize you don't exactly have a freezer backstage. That's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients with meat and vegetables you can see in the bowl, but the difference is it's shelf-stable, which means I don't need a freezer or a cooler and there's no prep. So now I can throw a few packs in my bag and Doug still gets a healthy meal wherever we are. Doug absolutely loves it. And I like knowing I am feeding my baby something that's actually good for him. It's also the number one vet recommended fresh dog food made without preservatives or fillers. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.
And they looked up into the face of their mom as they were dying. We imagine, we don't know. So I get the emotion on either side, but the courtroom is a fascinating dynamic. Fascinating, because normally you've got the defendant on one side and then the prosecutors on the other, and then all the people who were aggrieved by the defendant's actions, the victim's family member, the victim's mom or dad or kids or whomever, all the people left behind in the wake of the crime, they're over behind the prosecutor saying, get him. Put him away for what he did to us. And then over on the defendant's side, you usually have like family members of the defendant who are like, yikes, we're supporting our defendant here, we're our loved one. We either think that they did it, but we're here for them, or we don't think they did it, and we're here for them. And the friends and all the Manginistas and people like that support the defendant. Okay, in this case, though, that's not happening. This courtroom doesn't have that sort of Greek wedding. It doesn't have that diametrically opposed philosophies. It's all one. They're all sitting behind Lindsay Clancy, her husband, who should be on the aggrieved side. He's behind her. He lost his babies at her hands, but he's behind her. Babies can't be there. Her family supports her. You know, there just isn't this other side behind the prosecutors of family members who want blood, want justice, want her put away. It's different. And there is perhaps no one better to take you inside that courtroom and explain, A, what's going on in this case, what it feels like, if the prosecutors are making their case, if the defense attorneys are chipping away at it with every single cross-examination that they're able to do, and what Lindsay Clancy's demeanor is doing for her case, given that the jury doesn't miss anything. There's probably nobody better than the guy who you're about to hear from. His name is Bob Ward. And yeah, I'll bet you know him already because I've interviewed him a bunch of times. And every time I interview him, I say the same thing. He is possibly one of the best investigative journalists ever. Bob Ward is a veteran reporter. He works for Boston 25, which is also WFXT-TV. It's a Fox station. And I had a long-ranging conversation with him about this case because he's there. And wouldn't you know it, he's reporting it. Thank you, Jesus. Here's my conversation. Bob Ward, thank you for being on Drop Dead Serious.
Thanks for having me.
I was looking forward to talking to you about this because if anybody knows a story in Boston, it's you. I've always said it. You're the best there is. Walk me through a little bit about how you see this case, the Lindsay Clancy case, and then I'll get into the intricacies in a minute.
Well, just as, you know, as a human being looking at this, it's an awful case of a young mother who has admitted taking the life of her three young children in an awful way with exercise bands. A young mother who was overwhelmed, who had recognized she was having mental health issues and was seeking help for weeks, if not months, before this tragedy happened. Overwhelmed with being a mother of three young children, her husband having a professional job, trying to keep it all together. And then one day at the end of January 24th, 2023, it all ended in a tragedy and a nightmare I don't think any of us can possibly imagine.
Do you get the sense, because you're pretty famous in Boston, people know you, they stop you on the street, they have their, you know, their thing that they follow and they want to ask you the opinion. What are people saying to you on the street about this particular case?
You know, everything I think has broken down into three camps. There's the one that says that how can a mother do this to her children? She should go to jail for the rest of her life. I don't care what happens to her. The second camp is the camp that says, you know, this wasn't Lindsay. I can empathize with her. She was a sick woman. She doesn't need to go to prison. She needs help. And then there's the third camp, that the conspiracy camp, that believes that Patrick Clancy killed the kids and is getting away with murder. So I get a little bit of that, of all three, when I go out in public. And I never know when somebody asks me about the case where they're coming from until they actually say it. And it seems to me that it's right now kind of evenly divided between all of those different camps.
I don't understand the third camp. If Patrick Clancy killed the babies, why would Lindsay have done all these things to herself and then gravely injured herself by jumping out of a window?
I agree with you. You know, for me, it's I don't know why it is, but people have a hard time believing that a young, attractive woman can do something horrendous. But I think that's what's at play here. And we had another big case here not too long ago, the Karen Reed case, that mm-hmm. there was also these other facts that people were bringing in. And I think since that case happened, people are looking at these criminal cases differently now. And they're trying to see if there's something that the police or the public have missed. So I think that's where that's coming from. And I like to remind people that every single criminal case that I've covered, every single trial I've covered, there are weird things. There are always questions that you're not so sure about, but they don't go to guilt or innocence. They're just weird things. And I get suspicious when everything is all tied up in a bow, and that's what gets me suspicious. So the fact is that there is no evidence that Patrick had anything to do with this. And the other major thing I tell people is that Lindsay Clancy, in her civil suit, is admitting that she killed her children. She's suing the pharmaceutical industry, and she has a different lawyer than Patrick. So these are totally different lawsuits, and it's in writing, and you can read it for yourself if you don't want to believe me. And so really, the facts are what's being presented in Plymouth County Superior Court. It's Lindsay Clancy who is on trial, not Patrick Clancy.
Well, and also, she's on trial for first-degree murder. Who in her right mind would say, sure, I'll take that bullet for you if you killed my children? It sort of flies in the face of logic.
It does. It really does. And that's kind of, you know, I'm willing to listen to what people have, but the information that I see online and what people talk about, it's all about, you know, what they, vibes, if you will, or just something doesn't seem right, or mm-hmm. something doesn't look right, or it just doesn't work that way. You know, we see him on the videos, right? We see him. That's him at the CVS, at that restaurant. The timestamps are there and it's locked in. There's nothing you can do about that. And, you know, it's a sad set of facts. And I sit in that courtroom every day and I'll look over at Lindsay Clancy and I see her and she doesn't, first off, she doesn't even look like she used to in the old photographs. She looks like a completely different person. She looks like she's kind of hollowed out. And I think about what she has admitted to, killing her three children. And it is hard to put those two things together, that this woman sitting in front of me killed her children with her hands, you know, with electric, with these exercise bands. It's hard to square just that fact away. Yet that is what happened.
With the human sitting in front of you. Talk to me a little bit about that, because when I've covered a lot of insanity defenses, and I remember one in particular up in the Pacific Northwest, Naveed Haq, where he was literally drooling. I mean, he had such a history of mental health disorders, and his parents trying to help him get well, and he was drooling in court, and the jury said, too bad, and they convicted him anyway. Yeah. I'm kind of wondering, like, some people just have no tolerance at all, and they think mental health is mamby-pamby, you know, hullabaloo. But what's your sense when you look at her? How does she come across in that courtroom if you might have been sitting on that jury?
It's hard to get a read on her. She is emotionless in court until, you know, the key points that we've seen in open court. But she doesn't, and she was like this during jury selection too. She doesn't, her facial expression is blank. She does look at her attorney and she can move. I mean, she's paralyzed from what we understand from the waist down. So she can move. She does speak to her attorney and she does look around. But by and large, it's almost like she's just there. When they were in jury selection, it was interesting. So my view in the courtroom is kind of what the camera's view is. I'm usually behind the camera. So she's over here and I'm seeing her profile. During jury selection, she sat up in the witness box. And when they were doing the voir dire, they brought all the potential jurors in. So she's facing us now. Mm. And you could see her. And the entire time she was, you know, she just had this serious look on her face. And you know, just because of the nature of it, it takes hours and days to do this. At some point, people do chuckle and say things, and her own lawyer would, but she never did. She never cracked a smile at all. She was all serious all the time.
And that's interesting. I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, oftentimes television is notorious for this. They'll take a quick little soundbite and sometimes there's a chuckle and a smile and there'll be a massive headline about that. But as you said, these are days and days, sometimes weeks and weeks, and in the case of OJ, months of testimony. And there are light moments as there are in any kind of, you know, discourse among humans. And typically it's interesting how the defendant reacts. And you're saying never once does she break.
I don't think I've ever seen her smile, Ashley, not one time. Mm. I mean, she's just, you know, like she's on the brink of an abyss. And that's how she presents herself.
Do you know if, and this is not unusual, lots of defense attorneys have either recommended or suggested or encouraged their clients to take medication. Some of these clients have to be medicated to get into that courtroom, not to break down, not to have those outbursts when awful evidence is presented, like the bodies of their children.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they give her something to get through it. If she did, then she didn't have anything the day they showed the autopsy photos or the day the 911 calls where that call was played.
It didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work. If they did give her something, it didn't work.
All right, talk to me about those days.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Healthcare can feel complicated. That's why Optum uses technology to connect the people and processes that make healthcare easier, more affordable, and more effective. We're making it clearer for you to know exactly what your benefits cover. And to help you better manage your health, we're coordinating care between your doctors and your technology. We believe better, simpler healthcare is always possible. That's healthy optimism. That's Optum. Visit Optum.com to learn more.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. Traveling with Doug is one of my favorite things, but when you're on tour like I am, bouncing between 35 cities, feeding your dog can get complicated. And that's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients that he's been obsessed with. But it's shelf-stable, so I don't need a freezer or a cooler or a whole travel operation just to feed my dog. Doug loves it, and I feel good giving it to him. So go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.
Well, the 911 call, let's start with that. Just go chronologically when Patrick Clancy, before he was brought in, they played it for the courtroom. Now, there's a judge's order that we could not record it. We could listen to it, and that was it. And it was actually, it was awful. It was truly awful to hear a human being's voice like that. It was a high-pitched wail from Patrick Clancy. I think we've seen the transcription of the 911 call. So what I heard, I didn't hear anything as far as what was being said on the call that was different than what I, from what I already knew. But when he finds his children, he goes down the stairs and you start hearing it. And it just seemed to go on forever. It was terrible. I mean, there's no horror movie. There's no Netflix special where you hear a 911 call that equals anything like this. It was the true horror of a man finding all three of his dead children. First Dawson and then Cora and Callan. It was just horrible. Lindsay was crying. I couldn't see the jurors. So I don't know. I would imagine a few of them were getting emotional. But after it was over, they called an immediate break. We all went out into the hallway. And I was glad they did because you really couldn't go on from that. It was terrible. Words just failed. I'm having trouble describing what it was like other than this high-pitched wail from a human being that just seemed to go on forever.
And you're a seasoned veteran journalist. You've seen all of it. You've seen everything. Hard for you to take in?
Yeah, it definitely was. Because I'm a father, and I had my children all grown, but when they were young, and if anything ever happened, that would be me. And that's what we had just seen Patrick Clancy, and now we're hearing this. And you just, that anguish, that agony, it was raw and it was real. And I'll never forget it.
That makes me wonder, I don't know if they, during trial, litigators are so incredibly busy, they don't really have a lot of time to consume media. I'm hoping that they know that there is this conspiracy theory movement that's now in a third of the camp, that you've divided. Certainly would help to release that call, wouldn't it, if those conspiracy theorists heard that?
It would, but it was Patrick Clancy through his attorney that asked that it be kept away from the public for privacy reasons.
Maybe that's changed.
Out there and shared.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's changed since the conspiracy theorists have exploded?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm pretty sure this is just the way it's going to be. I don't think it's ever going to be made public. I'd be surprised.
God, I hope he has a change of heart for his sake. I hate the idea that he's being victimized again by the crime that he's suffered through, and then by the mob.
Right. Oh, and then the second thing was the other big event was Lindsay's breakdown when the autopsy photos were shown. There were two sessions of autopsy photos. First, there was little baby Callan's autopsy photos and testimony around that. That was on a previous day, and that was pretty bad. Lindsay just immediately broke down for that.
What did you see?
Well, I couldn't see that. We can't see the autopsy photos. The only people that saw the autopsy photos, again, judge's order, were the judge, the defense table, although there was no screen in front of them, so she wasn't seeing them. I'm sure she has seen them. The prosecution, and then over in front of the jury, there are two screens in front of the jury. They were looking at it. There's a giant screen up behind, you've probably seen it on TV, by the witness stand. That was turned off. So nobody in the courtroom, other than the people that are going to decide this case, could see the photos. And I'm actually pretty glad we couldn't see it, to be honest.
Yeah, you can't unsee that.
No.
I've known veterans, police officers, prosecutors, journalists who've had to have therapy after sitting through some courtroom evidence of violent crime. And it is, people don't realize just how intense it is.
It is. I covered the Marathon bombing trial, Johar Zunayev, mm-hmm. Was it 2015, I think. And that was a federal case. And so, you know, there's no camera in the courtroom. And there were similar accommodations made in that trial as well. So in the Boston Marathon trial, there was a lot of video and a lot of audio that still has not been made public. You had to be in the courtroom to witness it. But when it came to the autopsy photos of the victims in the case, those were shown to the jury, but they were not shown to the rest of us. And the U.S. Attorney's Office said, if at 4 o'clock, I think it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the days that evidence came in, if you want to see the photos, you can come up to the ninth floor and you can see it. You can't take a picture of it, you can't record it, but at least you can see it. And if you need to describe it, you can. So I made it my business to do that. And they did not show Martin Richard, the child who was murdered that day, but they showed the other victims. And I wanted to see what the jury saw so it could inform my reporting and I get a better idea of what's going on. And it was tough to look at, but I did. In the Lindsey Clancy case, if the opportunity was made available to me, of course, I would avail myself. I would look because I think I need to see. Yeah, I think your mind fills in gaps anyway. Your imagination is far worse than reality. But I would still look. Saying that, I'm glad I didn't see it because, you know, we're talking about very young children. What, 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old. And, you know, like you said, you can't get those images out of your head once you see them.
It does. Like you said, it does change the metric because your imagination can fill things in, and sometimes very erroneously. Like perhaps those who are such backers of Lindsey Clancy can't get to the fact that three children were brutally killed, and those images may actually mitigate how they feel about the outcome of the case. You never know. Journalism is a very, very complete picture. It's an effort to get to the complete picture. It's a work in progress at all times, and it is a very painful thing sometimes to see, but oftentimes, like you said, necessary.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And I wanted to see what the jury was seeing.
How did they react?
Yeah, there was one juror in the back row. I knew from when they showed Callan's photos that this juror was going to struggle, and sure enough, as soon as they started showing the photos of the other two children, this person had a tissue up to the face and had a hard time with it, head down. There were that juror is older. There were some younger jurors away from me. That was a female juror. Okay. Further on down, away from me, more difficult for me to see from my vantage point. I could see other people struggling with it. Couldn't tell if they were actually crying, but I could see them getting emotional. Some of the men were just very stern, and you know, all of them were, I think, impacted by it. Now, what that impact is, we're not going to know until there's a verdict. But it was a powerful moment in the course of this trial.
So, thank you for this. It's not easy for you either to have to go through this, relive this, and think about the things you've seen, and letting us know how people are reacting. It's hard on journalists too. I'm curious about how things feel different. We're 2026. Postpartum depression is no longer baby blues. That's just such a bad euphemism. People understand mental health far better than they ever have. Do you think that that is making a huge difference in this case, or do you feel like we're still in a bit of the dark ages?
I think there's a lot of empathy for what Lindsey was going through and the mental health that she tried to get from about September 2022 all the way up until the day before this actually happened. There's a lot of empathy for that. I have no way of knowing how the jury is looking at this, but just from, you know, my conversations with people, I've had people ask me straight up, well, there's no way they're going to convict her on this, right? And I have to tell them, well, I really don't know. But there's one important thing to remember, and that is, and you would know this better than me, but when you get into the rules of beyond a reasonable doubt, well, both sides are say that she killed the children. So it's almost like an extra innings baseball game where the runner is already on second base. That's where the prosecution is. And really the question is, what was her mental state, and was she criminally responsible? Could she control herself? And that's the big question here. And I'm not just looking at reactions on the jury. I'm not going to say that there aren't a couple of people on that jury who might be thinking, I don't care about all this, all the mental health. There are three dead children. She's got to go away. So I think people are, by and large, more empathetic towards Lindsay Clancy. People have had their own interactions with our mental health system, or just the health system, period, and know how hard it can be sometimes just to get a doctor, to get a diagnosis, to be, to have someone take you seriously. So I think, people can relate to that. And I think that part of it has, that part of the equation has changed from the days of baby blues. And you'll get over this, just take a nap and you'll feel better.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows somebody who's gone through some measure of postpartum.
Since the days of Andrea Yates, it's hard to believe we're like a quarter century, right? Since Andrea Yates, I remember that case. I remember being on the anchor desk when it broke. That was something else. And I remember the control room saying, we're not going to break into programming for that. I thought, the hell you aren't, And I think it took a girl to say, we're breaking in. This is massive. And then I remember jury number one finding her guilty and jury number two finding her not guilty by reason of insanity. Yes, there was some difference in evidence there, but I think it took a different sensibility for those to actually believe in the principles of the insanity defense. In this particular case, I had this really good conversation, Bob, with a mental health practitioner who does this for a living, regularly deals in this kind of work. And she really helped me understand that they have got to get to psychosis. They have to get beyond depression into psychosis, because psychosis is where the I don't know right from wrong lives, right? And what was fascinating was that she told me you can come in and out of psychosis. You can be in it 1 minute and out of it the next minute. You can be a fantastic mom, spot on with everything and making the lunches perfectly, and then be in it and then be right back out of it again. And I'm wondering if you're feeling the evidence so far maybe going there, even though we're in the prosecution's case. Are you seeing that that might be a possibility for her?
Yes, absolutely. That's the big unknown here, is what is postpartum psychosis? What does it mean to be in psychosis? The jury's getting conflicting visions and images of Lindsay Clancy. One of the things that they're getting is that she was trying to get treatment, but she never stayed with the treatment very long. Yes, she was at McLean in-house for 5 days, but she requested to be let out, and she was, because she wasn't sectioned. She wasn't forced in, because her daughter's fifth birthday party was coming up. She wanted to be a part of it. And, they've had testimony about how in the weeks before this took place, she was in a happy place. They did the birthday party. They went to the Museum of Science. They went to a hotel down on the Cape for a water park, and she seemed to be getting better. And Patrick Clancy said the day this happened, it seemed to him that she was the best that she had been. But we're starting to see through the mental health records that she's telling the nurses and the doctors something completely different. So I think that, this is what it's all about, is so how do you rectify that one day she's fine, at least outwardly she appears fine. That day she took her daughter to the pediatrician. That day she's playing with the kids in the backyard building a snowman. But what happened in the 4 o'clock hour when she goes on the computer and starts doing searches for the CVS and the restaurant that she sent her husband to? What changed? And, the jury, I think, deserves an explanation for that.
Yeah, looks can be deceiving, right? Looks can be so deceiving.
Right.
once they, right. And I wonder, I don't know if you know what, if the witness list is, you know, been publicized and if it's maybe morphing, but do you know if Lindsay Clancy's, attorney, Kevin Reddington, mm-hmm. has a lot of his own medical experts, that are coming onto the stand?
Yes, he does have some experts that he's going to be calling. He's also trying to call in, and there's going to be a voir dire on this maybe as soon as Monday, of a woman that was working at McLean, which is the inpatient hospital she was at, which is associated with Harvard and Mass General, where she spent 5 days, where Lindsay Clancy was for 5 days. They're trying to get in this woman as a witness to say that the help that was available there was almost non-existent, that it was a hellhole. And that's going to be interesting. But yeah, he is going to be calling people to explain what psychosis is, what postpartum psychosis is. And I understand the government is also going to have rebuttal witnesses after that before we even get to closing statements and sending it to the jury. So it's this, to me, the testimony on the postpartum is the case.
Yeah. It's going to be the battle of the experts, and it often is the battle of the experts. Even Casey Anthony became a battle of the experts in smell evidence and that kind of thing. I just wonder how many people are willing to have an open mind when it comes to this kind of science and this kind of medicine, because it is evolving, and it has been evolving since you and I were kids, you know. But you can't escape the elephant in the room, and it is the sadness of the loss of these babies.
Absolutely. It's a heavy place to be in that courtroom some days. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people commenting about how the prosecution is going overboard with their presentation with the autopsy and the information that was included. And, you know, they have to prove, they're trying to prove first degree murder. And part of that is extreme atrocity and cruelty. And that's why this is so in your face. They're trying to prove that. And they're not, this is not just let's be nice. They're trying to prove something that happened here. And that's an ugly, ugly fact. And
yeah, I think we're there with heinous, atrocious, and cruel. I think 100% we are. It's just that there's another side of it, right? There's another.
Yeah, I know. And this is why I keep going back and forth with the whole thing. Because I mean, I've known people that suffer mental health illness, and I know what it's like not to be heard by in the medical profession.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Think about your mentors and idols, the people who inspire you most. While it may look like they have all the answers, they don't. But they do know when to ask questions and seek the support they need. In a world that glorifies hyper-independence, it's easy to forget that we're all better with a support system. Therapy is a great way to find a consistent source of support in your life, so you can break free from the outdated belief that seeking help is a sign of weakness. BetterHelp has experienced therapists ready to help you with challenges ranging from anxiety and depression to relationships and stress. It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life. And you deserve that. You can even send your therapist a message anytime something comes up. Build your support system with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that it, you know, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And then, but then I also think about those kids. I don't know about you, but when I saw the exercise bands in my mind, I thought, you know, my reporting leading up to it, I don't know why I didn't Google exercise bands, because I thought they were sort of those thin plastic things you get when you do physical training, right? PT. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was. But when I saw them, it looked more like bungee cords. Yeah. And, you know, and those are tiny kids. And the defense wanted to keep out pre-death photos of Lindsay and the kids because they showed how big she is versus how small the children were. But it spoke to cruelty, extreme atrocity. So they were let in. And it appears from what we're hearing is that she killed Dawson first, the three-year-old, in Patrick's office, and then went and brought Cora and the baby down on another part of the basement. And that's where that happened. And, you know, the reason I bring that up, and I don't know if the prosecution will, it's just something to keep in mind, something that bothers me, is that she wrote on Facebook and in the journal about how Dawson was too full of energy. You hear the phrase rambunctious all the time, that he was a handful. She had three young children, but he was a handful. And also appeared that Dawson, because he was the oldest son, might have been Patrick's child, closer to Patrick than to her. Mm. So when I look at this timeline, it feels to me that the moment Patrick was out of the house on his way to CVS is when this all started happening. And the very first thing it looks like she did is she took the three-year-old off the couch where he's eating his chicken nuggets, I think it was, and brought him downstairs and strangled him. And the testimony is that, you know, the use of the exercise band, the pressure increased and decreased. It was the first one. And then when she did the other two, it seemed like it was like a constant thing. She knew what she was doing. That is the stuff that I can't get out of my head. And as I try to figure out this case, that I just kind of, yeah, you know, where do you go with that when you're trying to figure out justice?
I'm really glad that you outlined that, because in the Yates case, again, it's a real comparable, but Yates case, Andrea killed her children youngest to oldest, which is odd, right?
The
oldest was seven and he was fully aware of what was happening. And the youngest was just the baby. Mary was just tiny. I think she was 8 months or something, very similar to Callan. And I was wondering about the system, the strategy, how it actually happened. And this makes sense. If Dawson was the handful, it would make sense for her to kill him first. And then perhaps the older girl before, the baby could see anything, and the baby wouldn't know what the baby was seeing. And then the third child might have been the baby. I don't know. I can never get over why Andrea chose to go in the direction she did with those children, because the seven-year-old ran for his life and fought. And I don't know what transpired in the basement. Have they talked about that at all?
No, not really. The closest thing we get is that when the autopsy was happened this week, they talked about how Dawson and Cora had some bruising on their arms and legs that were not explained by the measures to save them. So, and they were fresh bruises because they were red. There was the suggestion that at least with Dawson that he struggled. You don't know how forcefully she carried them down the stairs. We just don't know. And we don't know how long it took to strangle them. There's just these general ideas, how long it takes. And that got really tricky, too, because the judge, you know, there were objections from Kevin Reddington, and then the judge kind of shut that down. And then they tried to bring it in again on Thursday, I think it was, through another witness.
It takes a couple of minutes. That's a long time to be in that act.
Right. And the reason I think that it happened immediately after he left is that we have that phone exchange when he's at the CVS trying to get the prescription, but not the prescription, the over-the-counter medication, and he can't find it. And he said he gave her a call to find out if the generic would be all right. And she didn't answer the phone, but then she did call him back for 14 seconds. And Patrick's testimony is, it sounded like she was in the middle of something. I thought maybe she was giving the children a bath, and then that was it. There's one last call from Patrick to Lindsay, and she doesn't take that call. So assuming that that's when it happened, he interrupted her, or she was about to do it, or just finished, and she was going to go upstairs to throw herself out the window. The reason I say that is that when the first responders got there, a little bit after 6 o'clock, two of the children were gone, and they were cold. They were gone. There was nothing. There was no pulse. There was no hint of life, no sign of anything. So she must have acted very quickly. And I think that what happened up in the second floor bedroom took some time. And maybe she was having second thoughts up there. There's a lot of blood on the floor of that bedroom. Apparently it's not easy to kill yourself, especially violently.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's horrible.
I just think about Patrick. I mean, obviously you know what he's like in his worst distress because you've heard that call. What is he like in the courtroom?
He was very matter of fact, and he was not unlike Martin Richards' father, who was from the Boston Marathon trial, matter of factly recounting the events of that day that he lost his whole family, basically. Patrick was just a man of few words, and I wasn't sure of it at the time, but now I am. That was the first time the two of them had seen each other since that night.
Really?
Yeah. He took a phone call from her, but he had not seen her. That was the first time. So just imagine that dynamic. Just imagine, take the murders out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, a divorced couple seeing each other for the first time, you know, since whatever it was that caused you to get divorced happened. That's an emotionally loaded thing.
So well, divorce is the least of the issues here, exactly. Right? Like, Jesus.
Now add in this horrific murder. He looked like a shell of himself. He looked like a shell of himself.
What do we know about his life? He's remarried. Does he have another?
I don't know. I think people are thinking that he is a father again because mm-hmm. Kevin Reddington, early on in the trial, said something about Patrick and said that they're divorced. He said they're divorced. They're remarried. He's got a new family. He's moved on. I think people are taking "he's got a new family" to mean
maybe
that
new
he
children.
Had a child. But I don't know. I haven't had the opportunity to find out. I think they just got married this year, right? In April, I believe. So I've read that he and his new wife only met each other a year after the murders.
Oh, my God.
They didn't know each other ahead of time. But it is a short period of time. I mean, it really is. And I understand why that bothers people. It's hard, but we're not in his shoes.
We're not in his shoes. I mean, no. My God. I remember Dr. Pettit remarrying after his wife and two daughters were raped and murdered and burned alive. And I thought, oh my goodness. But then I thought, well, when you have that much profound loss and emptiness, it's wonderful if something can come along and fill even just a small part of that. So I get it.
Yeah, I do too. You can just see it on his face. I mean, you've seen the coverage and his answers weren't very long. I don't think he could really speak too much. And another thing too, is they were showing the photos of those trips to the Museum of Science and the family trips. And it occurred to me, if this is the first time that the two of them have laid eyes on each other, when do you think the last time was he looked at video of the intact family? That's probably the first time in open court with the world's attention on it. What a horrible position to be in. So, I think he was also stretched thin and overworked and overwhelmed with the situation that was going on. And I think that leads into sort of people reading into his reactions and everything and the way he acted in those months before the murders. I think he was probably struggling to understand what was going on with his own wife. You know, she, you know, the anxiety was hitting every time. Mm-hmm. Whenever it was time to go back to work, that was when the anxiety hit for Lindsay. And, you know, this is a guy who is a young guy. He worked for Microsoft, a tech guy, you know, professional. He's trying to, you know, keep the money coming in. He's got the three young kids. And he said everything was great until it came time for Lindsay to start thinking about going back to her job. And going back to the job was 2 days a week, if I remember correctly, at Mass General Hospital. You know, maybe he's, you know, I'm not saying, I'm not justifying it, but yeah. I can easily see where he might think, well, why can't you just go back to work? It's only a couple of days. We have a nanny in to help.
Right.
And I don't, I think he was slow to understand. And and I think the evidence of that is, I think in December 2022, there was a professional who said, I think Lindsay has bipolar. And he said, my wife does not have
bipolar. He was quite adamant about that.
Adamant. And
do
I think,
you think though his support of Lindsay, I mean, most people, their logic would say he would be livid. He'd want to see her burn in hell for, you know, murdering his children. But that's not happening. Do you think that is, as a prosecution witness even, do you think that's not lost on this jury that he is not out for blood?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. They gave him the opportunity to say what he thought about Lindsay. I don't think that would be able to be admitted anyway. But, you know, I don't know. It's a good question.
But you can tell, right? If you would expect the father who has lost his three babies to the hands of this woman would just be seething on the stand, and he wasn't. I just feel like they would think something, hey, wait a minute. Something's up here.
Yeah. It was just like you said before about the sadness in the courtroom. I think that's what it was, that atmosphere of sadness when he was on the stand. So I think that's really what they were taking away from it. I think there's a lot of empathy for him.
Yes. Oh, my God. First and foremost, right? And talk to me a little bit about the note that has been introduced. It was a electronic note that Lindsay had started on her phone, and it almost read, you know, it was started a month before the killings, and then it was modified a day before the killings. I don't know the extent of the modification. I don't know if it was just opening it, pushing a space bar and closing it, or whether it was completely rewritten. I don't know that. But it really did read almost as though I'm going to do something and I need to give you a reason why. It doesn't look good for her.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, I kind of want to wait to hear how the defense handles this, Ashley, you know, to put all this into context, because everything about up until now has been, it looks like this, and then there's an answer for it to take you over this way.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the smoking gun in this case.
I really don't. I'll tell you what, I'm calling you as soon as we hear the defense case, because you're right. Whenever we go into a trial, it looks like a slam dunk when the prosecution's done. That's what it's supposed to look like. And then the defense case brings you back to normal, or brings you back to center, oftentimes, not always.
Right.
But I am curious in this case where the defense will bring us. Will you come back?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bob Ward, it's always good to talk to you. I'm one of your biggest fans.
Well, thank you, Ashley. Vice versa. Thank you.
My great thanks to Bob Ward. I am such a fan of his work. Again, nobody has worked longer and harder hours than that veteran, and nobody knows more about the situation in a courtroom than Bob, or in a crime story, or in any news story for that matter. He's been there, done that, covered it, and assessed the good, bad, and the ugly. So big thanks to Bob Ward. Big thanks to you for listening and for watching. Don't forget to subscribe for all the updates in this case. And remember, truth isn't just serious. It's drop dead serious.
Healthcare can feel complicated. That's why Optum uses technology to connect the people and processes that make healthcare easier, more affordable, and more effective. We're making it clearer for you to know exactly what your benefits cover. And to help you better manage your health, we're coordinating care between your doctors and your technology. We believe better, simpler healthcare is always possible. That's healthy optimism. That's Optum. Visit Optum.com to learn more.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes.
seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes? Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. Traveling with Doug is one of my favorite things, but when you're on tour like I am, bouncing between 35 cities, feeding your dog can get complicated. And that's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients that he's been obsessed with. But it's shelf-stable, so I don't need a freezer or a cooler or a whole travel operation just to feed my dog. Doug loves it, and I feel good giving it to him. So go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.